On this edition of the Scott Radley Show podcast, we are talking with Stephen Del Duca, leader of the Ontario Liberals, about some of the campaign ideas, the policy promises he has made in the past couple of days, including banning handguns and police departments having to announce their minority makeup, their demographic makeup. We'll get to that with him. We are talking to Arbor Jacki, outstanding defenseman for the Hamilton Bulldogs, who actually is from Hamilton. The Bulldogs opened their playoffs on Thursday this week, expected to have a long playoff run. And Bill Brieux joins me to talk about Netflix and other streaming services that seem to be hitting some speed bumps these days. We'll get into all of that. Stay with us.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
So over the past couple of days, there have been a number of announcements. Now, we know there's an election coming up in June. And so we expect that this is the time that we're going to start hearing announcements from our provincial leaders. Stephen Del Duca, I mean, certainly Doug Ford has made promises about things, and Andrea Horvath and Stephen Del Duca now getting some attention for some promises over the past couple of days, some of it around issues relating to racial things, and some of it yesterday really, boy, got people talking, because yesterday, as leader of the Ontario Liberal Party, he promised that if elected premier in June, handguns will be banned in this province within a year. It's certainly a topic that has been brought up before, been discussed before, carries popular opinion in some cases. The question is, can it be done? Is it reasonable? Is it doable? Stephen Del Duca, leader of the Liberal Party of Ontario, joins us now. Mr. Del Duca, thank you for the time today.
My pleasure, Scott. Thanks so much for having me on.
Glad to have you back. There was a time not very long ago that our mayor here in Hamilton, Fred Eisenberger, proposed something similar, municipally, obviously. Nothing happened with that because it seemed like it just became too difficult to try and figure out how to do this. How would the Liberals ban handguns within a year in this province?
Well, first, let me say, I think it would be really tough municipality by municipality to deal with an issue like this. I mean, you know, a city like Hamilton could say they were going to ban it, but what would happen in Burlington? What would happen in Niagara? I mean, that's the challenge when you have 444 municipalities. I'll also say that even though I made a commitment yesterday that I'm proud of, you know, the calling for, and I will deliver a handgun ban, I think it would be terrific if we could have a national ban on handguns. We'll continue to push the federal government to move in that direction. But the good news is, for those of us who want to ban handguns, we now do have a federal partner that has said that they want to see this happen. They want to work with provinces and, yes, even municipalities to set up a framework through federal legislation that would either help get the job done for us or enable provinces like Ontario to pass our own legislation to make this happen. So we have a federal partner. They are willing. They have already been persuaded it's the right direction to go in. And that's why, should we earn the trust of Ontarians come June 2nd, we will deliver on this.
But how do you do something like that, though? Because you would have to put, I'm assuming, penalties in place that would be, I don't know, within the provincial rules, the provincial guidelines, what you could do with that. How do you give something enough teeth that it would truly ban a handgun?
Well, there's a couple of things that would have to occur, you know, as part of those discussions with the federal partner that we now do have that wants to see this kind of outcome. It could be that the federal government decides to pass legislation that sets a national framework, but then also empowers or requires provinces to pass their own laws. That is one option. We've seen that done with other issues that have come up in the past. Or they could simply say to the provinces, you pass your own laws in this regard. And then, you know, the federal government has also said that they will set aside a $1 billion national fund to help support this outcome. So I said this yesterday, it's possible, and I would certainly be pushing for this, that Ontario should get its roughly 40% share of that fund. That's $400 million that we'd have at our disposal to invest potentially in something like a buyback program. So a handgun owner in the province of Ontario would actually get a small financial transaction or benefit from turning in their handguns. We could look at Provincial Offenses Act penalties that could be included in this. So this is part of how we're going to go forward in partnership with the federal government. But the bottom line is, I want Ontario to lead in this regard. People are getting injured and people are getting killed by gun violence. And this is something we've talked about for far too long. We need real action now.
And you know what? I believe a lot of people would agree, especially with that last part, that say, we don't love the idea of having handguns in our cities. I think a lot of people would probably agree with that. But again, then I point back to the director or the director of the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police a couple of years ago said, look, it's a great idea, but most of the crime that is committed in this province with handguns is illegal handguns, guns that have flowed in here from across the border that we don't know about. So if we were to put a ban on those, and this is always the argument, you know this, that if we put a ban on the people who are law-abiding citizens might get rid of their handguns, but it doesn't get rid of the real problem, does it?
Well, look, I'm going to be honest here. I've never really understood the argument that says because the problem has many, many aspects, because it's a multifaceted problem, that we simply shouldn't be using every tool in the toolkit. So, for example, yesterday, in response to my announcement, the Ford Conservatives put out a statement, once again confirming that they have no interest, Doug Ford has no interest in dealing with any kind of handgun ban. And in their own statement, fighting against what I'm pushing for, they said that somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 25% of the gun crimes in Ontario are committed with legal guns, as if to suggest, therefore, it's not an issue. Well, tell that to the family of someone who's been wounded, or worse, tell that to a victim or the family of a victim who's lost their life because a legal gun was used. So, for example, in Toronto, back on April the 12th, just a couple of weeks ago, there were two individual men, a 21-year-old and a 35-year-old, both of whom were killed randomly by a gun owner. When police went and got into his home, they found an arsenal. These are their words, an arsenal of legal guns that he had in his possession. So my argument is, yes, we need to stop illegal guns. Yes, we need to fight gangs. Yes, we need to partner with the feds and the municipalities to do all of that. But why would we not also want to deliver a handgun ban to take care of those illegal guns that are being used in the commission of a crime? Doug Ford won't do it, I'm convinced, because he's being backed by the gun lobby. Ontario Liberals will deliver on this.
One of the ways that some people have suggested that the illegal gun problem could be dealt with potentially is by much, much, much stiffer penalties for those who are caught with them. You've talked about the partner in Ottawa, the willing partner now. Would you lobby for much stiffer minimum sentences for those who are caught with illegal guns?
Well, look, I think when we're talking about an issue as serious as this, when people are no longer feeling as safe and as secure as they should, because a lot of the gun violence we're seeing in Ontario this year is random. It's not targeted, it's random. That to me is totally unacceptable. So I do believe every option should be on the table for discussion. I think we should involve law enforcement, we should involve community advocates, academics, and yes, other levels of government in the discussion to figure out how we're actually going to get at this problem and make a meaningful difference instead of just more talk, just more hot air from politicians. I don't want that. Your audience doesn't want that either. We want to see a real action. That's why Ontario Liberals are committing, and we will deliver on a handgun ban within 1 year of taking office should we earn people's support on June 2nd.
Let me pivot just a bit because you made some other announcements today, and I don't obviously have time to get into all of them. I wish we had a lot more time. We'll talk about this down the road, I'm sure. But one of them was you made a number of announcements today about trying to solve, to help, not solve, we're never going to solve probably, but to help reduce racial issues and racial problems within the province. And one of those areas was policing. And you say that you would, if elected, require police departments to disclose diversity statistics of their officers. Why?
Well, I think it's really important in life to measure what matters. When you don't measure, you can't hold yourself accountable or the system accountable to make sure that the police services that we have in Ontario are reflective of Ontario. So if you live in this province, you should be able to look at your police service and know and have faith that it looks like you do, that you're actually being served by people who look like you, understand your experiences. And in addition to this requirement for transparency so we can measure our progress, I'm also saying that a provincial government that I will lead would step up and invest in making sure we hired more officers over and above what's already accounted for across all of Ontario's police services to help make sure that underrepresented and racialized individuals are encouraged to join police services. This, to me, goes all kind of hand in hand to make sure that we continue to find ways to make sure our public servants and public services are reflective. We can work hard on challenging racist ideas. We can work hard on de-escalation, mental health strategies. All of it's required to get to where we need to be in this regard. And I'm determined to do the hard lifting or the heavy lifting to make this better.
You just mentioned that you would like to see the public services reflective. Would you then extend this beyond just police and say any public sector that we want to see that all Crown attorneys have their backgrounds disclosed, their nationalities, minorities disclosed, doctors that are paid, teachers that are paid, politicians, assistants that are paid? Should anybody who's on the public dole, on the public payroll, should they be disclosing their diversity numbers to make sure that they're reflective?
Well, I'll give you a good example. You're talking about the public sector, but I'll give you a good example. A couple of weeks ago, when I announced the Ontario Liberal plan for equal pay and equal opportunity for women, I said that an Ontario Liberal government would move forward whereby publicly traded companies, I want to get my language right here, publicly traded companies would have to disclose amongst their executive ranks and amongst their boards how many women, for example, were actually represented. Again, this is about transparency so we can track and measure our progress. Having a whole bunch of empty words, that rhetoric that politicians often fire off that doesn't actually make a meaningful change because we don't track our progress or measure what matters, to me, that's an old style of outdated, old-fashioned leadership. I want us to see everybody in this province have access to all kinds of opportunity. Women, people who've been underrepresented, racialized, all of it. Everyone should have a chance in this province to go as far in life as their talent and their effort will take them. And these are some of the steps that will help us get there.
But anyway, just got to go. But I go back to my question. So does that mean that down the road we could see Stephen Del Duca saying we want to see the same for teachers, for doctors, for nurses, for all members of the public sector?
Look, I think I made the commitment today about what we would do with respect to police services. I'm open to discussions where we see circumstances in other aspects of the public service, where we think there is severe underrepresentation, where we have challenges. And we know within our police services, women and men out there on the front lines of policing who do the very best that they can. But we know that we've had some issues over the past couple of years where there have been some tragic circumstances where a lot of concern has been understandably expressed because of how we haven't properly trained officers in de-escalation on an ongoing basis, mental health challenges, you know, combating racist attitudes. So this is something that we have to fund, we have to support, and Ontario Liberals are determined, I'm determined, as someone who is the son of immigrants in this province who's being given so much opportunity, I'm determined to expand opportunity for every single Ontarian, and I won't stop until we get that job completed in the right way.
Ontario Liberal leader Stephen Del Duca, listen, appreciate the time today, and I look forward to chatting down the road about other things that come up. Thanks for this.
My pleasure, Scott. Take care.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
The Hamilton Bulldogs, first place in the entire Ontario Hockey League, and not by a little bit, first place by a good margin. They begin their playoffs and hopefully their long run to a John Ross Robertson Cup and then to a Memorial Cup berth, and who knows after that. But game one against the Peterborough Petes of the playoffs tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. And one guy who is going to play an enormous role for the Bulldogs in this playoff run. It's an interesting story. Not only is he a Hamilton guy, so he got to play an outdoor game like two blocks from where he grew up once upon a time, but he is the prototypical Hamilton hockey player. He's big, he's talented, he is tough. Of all the guys on this team who I would least want to be punched in the face by, it would be this guy. His name is Arbor Jacki, who joins us now. Arbor, how are you tonight?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I am thrilled to have you. It's been an amazing year for you guys. I mean, it has been dominant. And I got to wonder, when you have the kind of year that you guys have had, does it make you want the regular season to just continue on because it's been so much fun because you go into every game knowing you're going to win? Or are you sort of really anxious to get to the playoffs because you're looking for a new challenge because it's sort of old to win that many times that easily?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the regular season was fun and we played well and we obviously won a lot of games, but when it comes down to it, we're here to win some hardware and get a win. So we're definitely excited for playoffs and everyone's itching away to start. So
at any point along, and you're 20 or 21 now?
I'm 21.
21. Okay. So at any point along the way, from probably when you started hockey, when you were 5 or 6 until now, have you ever played on a team that's won this many games and been this dominant against your competition?
No, definitely not. Sometimes I wake up and I think like, wow, like I've never played on a team that's been this good or won this many games or done the things we've done. So it's been really fun.
Now, for those who don't know, Arbour was traded to the Bulldogs at the very beginning of the year, January 6th, I believe. When you came here, when they told you you were coming to Hamilton, Hamilton had a good team then, but not like it is now. Did you expect that this was going to happen when you came here?
Yeah, obviously, you don't really know what to expect when you're getting traded because, you know, they had a good team, but I hadn't played them or played any of the East teams this year, so I didn't really know what to expect. But obviously, when I came, I was pretty excited once I saw how the team worked and how the boys were rolling.
Maybe I should have asked that question differently, quite honestly, because it just dawned on me. I said you came here January 6th. That was the beginning of the year. So since you came to Hamilton, the Bulldogs are 35-4. You're the reason this team is so good, obviously.
Oh, it's definitely a team thing. It's not just me. I mean, I've been out of the lineup quite a bit too, so with suspensions and like a knee injury, but no, they've just been great all in all. So
why is it so good? What do you think is the reason? Because I mean, look, everyone's going to have their own theory, and you're in the room. What is special about this team that has made it so successful?
Yeah, we just have a really great tight group, and everyone's best friends on the team. And I've never had a team where it's everyone likes each other this much, and we just have a great mindset in the room, and it's just a great culture all in all. So I think all of that and buying into the system that the coaches put, it all factors a big play in how we're doing this year.
All right, you're all best friends, but how many of them, honestly, if I was to pull them aside, how many could spell your last name on their first crack?
I don't think too many, but they all know how to say it, so that counts.
That's all that counts. You know, someone told me the other day a secret to your name, and it's actually helped. If you read it backwards, it looked like it reads out how it's pronounced.
Yeah, my parents have been telling people that since I don't know how long ago, but they say, yeah, if you read it backwards, that's how it's pronounced, and then everyone just kind of looks at you with a weird face. But
have you had, since you've been with the team, have you had people come up to you and like try to figure out how you say your name?
No, I think most people knew already because
most people knew. Okay,
it's a big thing, but a lot of guys know, so it wasn't too hard.
This is when you guys go into the playoffs, and again, starting tomorrow night at 7 against Peterborough. I don't think I'm saying anything to you that is going to be a surprise. When you finish with the team that you had and finish as far in first as you did, there's going to be pressure on you guys. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with those kinds of expectations that people have that, you know, I think they expect you're going to have a long playoff run?
Yeah, I think, honestly, I don't think anyone's even thought of being under pressure or whatever, but we're just all level-headed right now, and we stick to the process, and we take it game by game, and we don't take anyone lightly. So I think I honestly don't think anyone's nervous or anyone feels pressured at all to do well.
I'm guessing those expectations are the same in the room, though. I'm guessing that you guys all expect you're going to have a long playoff run.
Yeah, it's like we're a very confident team, and we're confident within our game, so we definitely expect to go all the way and obviously take it to the Memorial Cup.
A moment ago that I mentioned that since the start of 2022, you guys are 30, it's either 34-4 or 35-4. It's a ludicrous number, whatever it is. It's absurd that you guys have done that. One of those losses, though, one of those four losses came to Peterborough. That's who you're going to play in the first round. So I got to ask you, I'm fascinated by the psychology of this, and I'll throw it at you. Is it a good thing that one of those losses came to Peterborough because it's a reminder to you guys that they can compete? If you don't play your best, they can still win games. Or would you have preferred that you just simply clobbered them every time you played them to leave no doubt in their mind and sort of defeat them before they start that they have no chance?
No, I think it's definitely good that we took that loss. Obviously, it's never good to lose, but that definitely put us in a place where we're like, this team can definitely beat us if we're not on our game. And obviously, in playoffs, every team is different, so we're definitely expecting a good, strong team from their side.
A few years ago, now you're a Hamilton guy, as I say, grew up right near Tim Hortons Field, Iverwin once upon a time. A few years ago, there were some local guys who were on the Bulldogs team that went all the way and ended up winning the championship. You know all about that, right? You were pretty familiar with that team.
Yeah, I was definitely familiar with that team and the guys that were from Hamilton because I do skate with them, and they brought
But even before guys. Then? Even before then, you were at most of those games, right?
Oh, yeah. I was watching those games. I went to the final game when they won, and I went to all the games that were at home. But we didn't end up driving to the Sioux, but if they lost game six, we were going to go drive out to the Sioux to watch it.
So, really? You were going to drive all the way up?
Yeah, me and my buddy.
That's hilarious. So did you ever think then that you might be in that same position, that you would be playing on that same ice for your hometown on a team like that, that could contend for a championship maybe?
No, never. Back then I was actually a junior B player. So never then did I thought I was ever going to be playing for my hometown city, and especially having a chance to do what they did. So
just before I let you go, is it a different thing? I mean, listen, you played in Kitchener, which before here, which is a great OHL market. I mean, the fans there are great. Have lots of, you know, a huge fan base for that team. It's not your hometown though. Is there a difference playing for your hometown?
Yeah, it definitely is. Cause it's like the support's coming from where you grew up, and you see all like everyone, you know, around here is all going to the games and they're all texting you after. It's obviously the fan base was amazing in Kitchener too. And they had great support there, but yeah, it's definitely touches the heart a little more when you're playing in front of your home crowd.
Game one, as I've said a couple times, game one tomorrow evening, 7 o'clock at First Ontario Center. The Bulldogs face off against the Peterborough Petes, best of seven. You'll see him, number 8, Arbor Jack guy. One of the better players on the team for sure this year. Certainly a dominant player, and I'm sure will be through the playoffs. Arbor, really appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Scotty. Appreciate it.
He's a very hard player to miss. He's a huge guy, and you know, you just heard him. Lovely guy off the ice, not as lovely on the ice, especially if you're on the other team. And I was not kidding at the beginning. Of all the guys on this team that I would not want to be punched in the face by on the ice or off, he would be number one on my list. When you shake his hand, and if you get the chance, he did not ball up his hand into a fist when I was near him, thankfully. But do not go on the ice and ask him to just see how he throws. It would not go well. But he is not just a guy who can do that. He has been a dominant player on this team this year, and they begin their playoffs tomorrow. So there you go.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Now, I don't know if you pay attention to the stock market, but if you do, if you have been monitoring what's going on, and we're monitoring it earlier today, you probably would have noticed at some point that the share price for Netflix was down 37% today. 37%. It finished the day down just over 35%. And this is because for the first time, the number of subscribers to Netflix has fallen. Something like 200,000 subscribers bailed out in the first quarter of this year. And the company is now saying that it's projecting further losses of maybe up to 2 million subscribers in the next quarter. Now, keep in mind, that 37% is only part of the story, because back in October, share prices peaked at $690 a share. It's now at about, well, it's at $226. So in 8 months, Netflix has dropped about 60% of its value. I'm not sure that we call this a disaster, but I am sure that this is not good for those who are involved in Netflix or with the company. I want to bring in Bill Brieux. He is a fantastic TV writer. You can find him online. You can see his stuff all over the place. Bill, thank you for the time today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Scott.
So I'm looking at this, and again, I go back to last October when this peaked, and you know, they've dropped 60% of their stock, and there seems to be problems with it. Was this inevitable? I mean, once upon a time, Netflix was the only game in town. It was an effective monopoly almost, because it was the first one into the streaming world. I mean, we even refer to a night of watching stuff on TV now as Netflix and chill. It sort of became the Zamboni or the Kleenex or the Band-Aid. It became the name that we call all of these things. So was this always going to happen when more and more companies got into the mix and things got diversified?
Well, they certainly threw a chill into the stock market, so I guess, yeah. And you're right. I mean, they had the game all to themselves. They started 10 years ago over that, and it was only in the last 3 or 4 years when the other competition started to really pile it on. And, you know, you've got Disney Plus. I think they were really one of the big hurdles for Netflix now, because that's a very robust service. You've got all the Marvel movies, you've got Star Wars, the Muppets, all the Fox programming and all the Disney stuff. So now the competition is pretty serious. Warner's with HBO Max and Paramount. It's gang tackling. And yeah, Netflix, as much as they spend on programming now, they are not the only game in town.
Well, yeah, no, you now have to, if you want to see everything, you have to subscribe to an awful lot of these services, which creates a level of competition that has not been there. Because I think, Bill, now for a lot of people, maybe for the first time, they really are looking at what's on each of these things and deciding which one appeals to them, as opposed to for a lot of people, it was sort of, we'll do the other ones, but we always have Netflix. Netflix is the default one. And then we'll choose the others. Now I'm wondering if people are looking and saying there's three or four others that I like even more than Netflix.
I think you're right. I think that's what's happened. I didn't subscribe to Disney Plus, for example, until the start of the winter when that Beatles documentary, Get Back, came on, part of their offer. And I thought, wow, you know, I've got to see that. Big fan. And, you know, once you get that, you look around and you see all the other things they have to offer, it becomes the new shiny toy that you want to look around. And I think also, like a year ago, Netflix, they had a great April with The Crown and the Queen's Gambit. They had several shows that were really red hot. And right now they don't, you know, they have, Is It Cake? You know, it's one of their shows. Is this a bowling ball or is it cake? You know, it's not quite as compelling, you know, so I they have the President Obama, you know, going through national parks, and the weather's changed. You want to go walking through national parks now, you know. So I think that's part of their dilemma, that it's we're hopefully through the pandemic. People aren't isolating as much as they were. So people, and also you've got this high inflation. Everything's more expensive. Your gas, your groceries, your heat. So you're looking around thinking, do I really need Netflix in May or, you know, whenever? And for a lot of consumers, obviously, the answer is no.
And you know, one of the things that, and correct me if I'm wrong, and people listening can also correct it, because I don't think I'm wrong on this, but I could be. I don't think that these streaming services have a, maybe you can buy for some, like Disney, I think you can buy for a full year and it's a little bit cheaper, but most of them, it's a month by month thing. So to drop in for a month drop out of a month and then come back into Netflix, say when something comes up that you really want to see, there's no real benefit to keeping it all that time. If you just want to drop in when The Crown comes on again, why not? It doesn't really cost you much to do that as opposed to sticking around full time.
That's right. You could hop in and out, and it's just as easy. I think back when I started subscribing to Netflix, they put their price up once or twice, but the note I got was, as a long-time subscriber, this doesn't affect you. So there was an incentive to remain a long-time subscriber. Now there isn't, because they've had, I think, three price increases in the last 3 years. One of those was when consumers here were finally faced with paying the HST tax, but you know, it went from about $10 a month to close to 20. And when your other prices are all going up on everything else and you don't see anything you really want to watch, then yeah, why not stop it?
You know, it's an interesting thing, Bill. You mentioned, well, years ago, I knew the guy who owned a gym, like a private fitness facility. And I asked him, I said, when are your prices going up? Because they were pretty low. And he goes, I'm never raising my prices. And I said, what are you talking about? And he goes, we have so many people right now who get their fee deducted every month out of their Visa, but it never changes. So it's just become part of the furniture. They never come to the gym. They never show up. But as soon as I raise my prices, they're going to notice something different on Visa. Go, well, I don't go, so I'm just going to cancel. He goes, we keep them enrolled by keeping our prices where they are. And I got to think that may be the same with this, that if you just keep your price where it is, even though your costs are going up, you prevent people from noticing that they're paying for it, even if they don't use it that much.
Yeah, he was a wise fellow. I think that's exactly right. If you subscribe, say, to Amazon Prime Video, as you mentioned, that's one where you could subscribe all year. It sort of comes with your Amazon membership. For 10 years, they did not raise their price. And that's as long as Netflix has been around. Just this month, though, they put it up $2 a month. But they also had a big press launch in Toronto just last week. and they came out and said, here's some exciting Canadian programming. We're going to do 10 new Canadian shows. Kids in the Hall, we're doing a new series with them. And so, you know, they at least were mindful that, well, we better, you know, we're putting the price up. You better say we've got something new for you to see. And that's, Netflix hasn't done that lately. Even though they still have new stuff every Friday, if you look at what's popular there, it's a bit stale. And viewers, you know, after you've been through it, after you spend 25 minutes trying to see if there's anything you want to watch, if there's nothing, then you're starting to say, why am I paying for it?
One of the realities is now, I think, that with so much competition, let me back up. These companies, in order to keep competition, have to have these massive content creation budgets. I mean, they spend a lot of money to make content, whether it's Apple Plus or whatever else. But if your subscriber bases start to drop, are they still going to dump the cash, the same cash, into the content creation because they don't have the pool of money to draw from?
Well, that's the trap they're in. They're spending, apparently, $13 billion a year trying to come up with content. And the fact that they're able to launch so many shows every Friday is astounding, really. And a lot of it is kids' shows, animated. They're the largest employers of animators in Canada, in the world. Like, they employ a lot of animators and just to crank out a lot of children's programming. But, yeah, after a point, unless those shows are translating into hits that people are glued to and want to keep subscribing to, you are kind of spinning your wheels. And it's tough business. It's not a science. If it was, CBS, NBC would, you know, never have got, their ratings would never go down. But trying to come up, you can say to David Chase, I need a new Sopranos, as they did, you know, and he came out with a prequel, which nobody watched just a, you know, less than a year ago. So even the real geniuses of television cannot, you know, just turn it on and off like a tap. So it's hard to make the next, you know, great show.
Well, okay, speaking of not watching, and let's be clear here, this is not just a Netflix problem. We don't want to be picking just on them because this is a problem with other streaming services.
Yeah, and stocks down as well, Scott. I mean, you know, it's tough for them all, sure.
One of the other ones, there was a huge deal, maybe less so up here, but in the States, there was a massive amount of effort made into getting people's attention to CNN Plus. This was going to be the pay extra for TV news operations, specialty stuff, more that you couldn't get before. CNN spent apparently $300 million on this, hired a bunch of high, big-name people, high-priced talent to come on the air, said they'd have 2 million subscribers after the first year. They now have 10,000 subscribers, and we hear that big cuts are coming to this thing now. What is the message that is sending to other places when you try to launch something like this? Like, it sounds daunting if you're another person who's looking at this. This seems like it's a message of a real cautionary tale.
Yeah, that one's even more fascinating, and I just think that they were very naive to think that a service that they now provide that's just part of your regular cable bill, say, that they also want you to stream. Well, what are you getting extra for streaming? And it's, well, a guy that, you know, used to be on Fox News, you know, if that's your
Chris Wallace,
yep. Yeah, like, that's not going to do it. And I think they're doing it at a time when, their ratings are down on CNN, which was, they were huge all through the Trump years, and you know, other things. But when the news started to become less chaotic and crazy, fewer people watch CNN. You know, they're back, I think, up with the war, of course, Ukraine, and people are viewing. And CNN's a very popular service in Canada, but overall their ratings are down just for their regular service. So trying to sell a new branch of CNN, unless you've got a great show, something that people have to see, it's just not going to be enough.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's got anything to do with news. I'm not sure. Maybe it does. I wonder if it's just, and it's not just even streaming or TV, people not wanting to pay for anything that they have been conditioned to get for free. And I think we see that in other parts of the world too, other parts of the industry.
Yeah, like Warner's was very high on their streaming service, so they ended up calling it HBO Max. And that's the whole Warner's library, everything from Casablanca to Cartoon Swim. You know, it has quite a robust offer, but it didn't really take off. And the executives there were all gone about 6 months after it launched. Like, you know, you can't just see Paramount has the Star Trek franchise. So, you know, you think just slapping Picard on the name of your new show and bringing him back would be enough. But if the guys making that show kill off that character, spoiler alert, and turn him into a ghost, people lose interest. And if it also, you watch 6 or 8 episodes of something now, you can binge it in a weekend, and then it's gone for a year and a half. In that time, you're looking around, seeing what else is on, other channels, other, you know. So part of the game is that the rhythm of churn, and it can be deadly for Netflix and for other services.
It all brings us to one other thing here, which is maybe the most interesting tentacle of this whole story was streaming, and that is we're hearing now from Netflix, from others, that including Disney with Disney Plus, we're hearing, you know, we're now looking into bringing commercials onto our streaming services that you may watch ads. Now, you can pay a bonus, you can pay a premium to get ad free, but if you don't, if you just pay your normal fee, you're going to get ads on there. Are people going to go for that? Are people going to accept that?
Well, it's been around for a while. You know, if you watch Tubi is a service that people,
but that's free, but that's free.
It is, but it's ad supported as well. You know, you have to sit through some ads, and even CBC Gem, like, you know, there'll be a short 15 second or 30 second tops ad break. That's ad supported video on demand, and it's been around, and you know, it's less expensive. You can subscribe for $5 instead of 15, and you know, for a lot of people that fits their pocketbook if there's content there that they want to see. So yeah, Netflix could try and do a cheaper Netflix, but you're right. If you've already told everyone you're building Cadillacs, then you come out with, you know, you know what I mean? Like, what was the Lada? Then are they going to buy it just because it's cheaper? It better, you know, get great gas mileage. There better be something about it that makes you want it other than the price.
You know, as we're sitting here talking, Bill, I got to think we're talking about, multiple services to see the stuff you want. We're talking about commercials. We're talking about increased costs. You know, it almost sounds like, what's that word? Oh yeah, cable. It sounds like we're taking streaming right back to where we left because we didn't like that stuff.
Well, it's going to be even more like that. The next thing streaming's going after now is live, which was the last vestige of, you know, broadcast. So you can watch now every Friday night. You can see a doubleheader on Apple TV Plus, Major League Baseball, and, you know, Dancing with the Stars. It's going to migrate over to streaming. You know, you'll probably start to see award shows on Netflix or other streaming services. So it's all sort of blending into one. And if consumers think they're confused now, it's going to become more so, I think.
I just wonder, I truly wonder if a smart cable operator with a decent marketing department could not use this to their advantage and remind people that you can get it all in one place as opposed to having to have all these different ones. I truly wonder if this is an opening for a really clever person in that business to get cable back on the front burner.
Yeah, it's just even the traditional broadcasters, Global and CTV, and, you know, they all have digital divisions now, and they urge you to watch their shows. Oh, did you miss it on 8 o'clock on Thursday? Well, you can stream it anytime on demand now. You just need our app. And that's where, you know, it's all become part of the same system. It's just, they're sort of, if you can't beat them, join them. And that's probably where it's headed, but it does not come down to the shows. It just is who has the ones you want. And Netflix still has a lot to offer, you know, a lot of great comedy specials. They've got one with David Spade coming up next week. And they have a ton of great documentaries on rock groups from the 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, and they have even shows that are coming back now. Ozark with Jason Bateman.
Yep.
The final season's about to start, and things like that. The Frankie and Grace show with Jane Fonda. But those are final seasons. So Netflix has to come up with the next, you know, whatever it is, Game of Thrones or the big game changer, I think, in order to keep or restore momentum that they used to have. But everyone else is trying to do the same thing. So it's just a real hard game.
I have an idea. Brio TV.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, listen, draw up the plan. We'll see if we can. I have a basement full of old 16-millimeter films. I can thread those up, and people can start threading instead of streaming.
There you go. The new thing, threading. And when I mentioned Brio TV, that's actually where you can find a lot of Bill stuff, and it's always excellent. And go online and find it, BRIOUX.TV. You find it there. Bill, listen, we always love having you on here. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure, Scott. Appreciate the plug.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
Three nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.